10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try, and this is your host, Tim Hyland. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, time for the annual Old College Try road trip. I think this is version 11, I believe.
11, double digits. I think we'll call it 10 and a half, because Lehigh Lafayette will count as a half.
So it's finally arrived, and as I told you yesterday, for myriad reasons, mostly because it's a very fun trip, I am super excited. This is arriving at just the precisely right time for me. How are you feeling about it, Mike?
I'm very, very excited for it. In fact, we're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon. 24 hours from this moment, we will be sharing a beer together in lovely Baltimore, Maryland, before heading out on Thursday to our trip. I can't wait. The only hint that I'll give you about where we're going is we will be the only people among our diehard group of listeners. The overwhelming majority of them will be impacted by a hurricane this weekend, and we will not.
Wait. Oh, our listeners will be impacted, but we're not.
Yes, our listeners will be impacted.
You think our listeners are overwhelmingly concentrated in the Southeast?
I think they're concentrated in the Southeast, and even the hurricane's going to impact Maryland, mid-Atlantic too.
Yeah, I actually took Monday off. I'm just expecting a shit show getting back from this trip. Like.
Well, you know, Tim, we're at the age where the buffer day off is very, very important. You cannot return from work or return from a trip and then go right to work the next day. That being said, I will be doing that. But I tip my cap to you for taking the buffer day.
Know why I'm doing this? I learned my lesson the hard way. This was the Oregon State trip. And I mean, it was a lot of travel no matter what. And we, of course, had different flights. I was flying to Philly. I was delayed. First of all, we got up at like, what, 3 a.m. to get to the Portland airport.
That was ridiculous. The only thing worse than that was LSU, where we basically slept for an hour.
Or Texas was pretty bad too. Anyway, so you guys got to the airport and your flight was on time. I was delayed in Portland for 6 hours, I think.
Oh,
so then I missed my connection in Minneapolis. I was stuck there with a bunch of drunk Eagles fans for a very long time. I didn't get home, I think, until 3 a.m. And the next day I had a job interview.
Oh my God.
And I physically couldn't do it. I had to call and be like, I'm sorry. My excuse was something rather. I didn't get the job. Like,
yeah, but you can take this job and shove it. That's what you should have said.
Anyway, so I'm looking forward to this so much. Like, it's always such a blast.
It will be great, and we'll have a lot to report on next week on the show.
All right, let's get to first of all, how was your weekend last weekend, Mike?
It was great. I watched a ton of football, mostly in the noon window. There were all kinds of great games going on, led by Maryland, Michigan. I also very much enjoyed Clemson and Wake, Kansas and Duke. The ending of the Missouri-Auburn game was incredible. Then it was a beautiful day. Went to Camden Yards for an awesome Oriole game that had just about everything, including a balk and a double switch in the American League, which you almost never see. That was fun attempting to describe to my or explain to my nephews. They lost 11-10, came back and watched Maryland or Indiana Cincinnati from like midnight to 3 a.m. So it was an awesome Saturday.
I had a pretty lovely day as well, pretty chill weekend. Of course, there was soccer, and then I watched a ton of football. I think, was it Saturday that the Guardians clinched? Mike, it's all a blur in our text chain.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but congrats to the Guardians for doing that. That's awesome that they're going to be in the playoffs. They will be my adopted team in the American League.
Pretty remarkable story, given that the team does not spend money, but they are like legitimately like they're good almost every single year. They just do a great job.
It has to be said, though, they very much benefit from the division in which they play.
That helps a little bit.
Yeah, I would say put them on the AL East and let's see how they do. But hey, listen, I'm not a hater. I'm pro Guardian, and I love Terry Francona.
Yeah, that stat that Dave shared today was pretty amazing, huh? Like,
yeah. For the listeners, what is it? Like, there've only been 17 games since 2013 that the Guardians were mathematically eliminated from the postseason.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Anyway, go Guardians. All right, we can review. You ready, Mike?
Ready.
Number one, Georgia 39, Kent State 22. Only here because, hey, good on you, Kent State, after getting your brains beating in the first 2 weeks to go into that trip and like actually hang for a little bit with Georgia. Look, this goes to show you, even, and look, they won by 17 points, right? Hardly the end of the world. I'm sure there's a subset of the Georgia fans who are grumbling about performance.
Oh, yeah.
Even excellent teams have down weeks, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be almost impossible for Georgia to get up a game. How many games? I mean, I guess they haven't won that many in a row because they lost the SEC title game, but they're the national champs. They've demolished Oregon already. They demolished South Carolina already this year. Going to be tough for them to get up, but I agree. Tip of the cap to Kent State. They're a very good MAC program. Interesting, this game was on like some kind of pay-per-view or something. It was actually not even on. So there were a couple parts, or regular TV. There were a couple parts that I was looking for it. A couple times I was looking for it because the score was, I mean, it was a 10-point game in the second half. Georgia was favored by 45, so needless to say, they did not cover. But while it might be an eyebrow raiser, I don't think it's going to have any lasting ramifications at all for either side, really.
No. Number three, Ohio State 52, Wisconsin 21. Look, I went into this game feeling that this was going to be no contest. This is not the Wisconsin we've come
to.
Can we stop pretending Graham Mertz is ever going to emerge to what people said he was going to be? It's not going to happen. And Ohio State is just – the offense is just – I know it's early, and I don't – based on the evidence I've seen so far, I'm comfortable saying it's one of the best offenses I've ever seen. They are just – the prospect of – and speaking as a Penn State fan, and I mean this very sincerely, this secondary we have this year – there's two first-round NFL draft choices in that backfield. It's probably the best defensive backfield I've ever seen at Penn State. And going into playing Ohio State, I'll have no confidence whatsoever. We can keep these guys in check. They're just ridiculous.
They are. But doesn't it seem – it seems to me like Wisconsin is taking a program-level step backward every year to the point where they're really just kind of an average team now. You know, they had a great run there with Bielema and winning the division, kind of owning that division. But those days seem to be long gone. They still have their running game, but the rest of their offense is terrible. And the defense, it can hold bad teams under 20 points. But look, no one's going to stop Ohio State, to your point. They just looked incredible. Although, what'd you think of those hideous black jerseys?
Yeah, I tweeted at some point. I'm like, Wisconsin is bad, but those Ohio State uniforms are worse. It's awful.
I know. And you have such great iconic uniforms at Ohio State too, but hey, they're not doing it for us, Tim. It's for other generations.
Cause we're outside of the desired demographic now, Mike.
We're outside of all desired demographics, even for our significant others.
Number four, Michigan 34, Maryland 27. Hey, I've not gotten much right this year. I did tell you last week, I had a pretty strong feeling that Maryland was going to keep this game close. I do think Maryland's a solid team. They're a tougher Maryland team than we've seen in the past. And because Michigan played nobody, as I thought, like Maryland did punch them in the face a little bit.
Yeah, this game was absolutely there for the taking for Maryland. They played very, very well, especially on offense. The way the game started was really the difference. The opening kickoff hit the Maryland kick returner in the head, recovered by Michigan. Next play, they scored a touchdown. They're up 7.6 seconds into the game. That being said, Maryland really calmed down and they played with poise through the rest of the first half. Talia and that offense is looking great. They're moving the ball left and right on Michigan. And then in the second half, a couple things happened. One, the Michigan pass rush got to Talia a little bit more, and then they hit him hard and injured his ribs. He was not the same for the whole second half of the game. In fact, toward the end of the game, he just came out. And Maryland could not stop Michigan's run game. Michigan, McCarthy did not have his greatest game, but Michigan just decided in the second half, we were just going to run it with their running back, Blake Corman, I think is his name. And he had over 200 yards. And suffice it to say, it was a great effort by Maryland, but Maryland now 0-29 against since they've joined the Big Ten against ranked teams in the Big Ten. That is a bad stat.
Look, I mean, look, they're playing, generally speaking, they're going to face a ranked Ohio State, a ranked Michigan, and a ranked Penn State every single year. You throw in Michigan State, who I would say like one out of 3 years is pretty darn good. I mean,
it's not one of those years.
No, and look, I think the fact that they've gotten Maryland to this point, even, like, they should keep building on this.
Yeah, they can build on this game, and they can have an excellent season this year. They can win, you know, 8 ball games. There's no reason they can't beat a Michigan State this year. I think it's it was a good performance by the Terps, and it was a very, very entertaining game.
And look, the reality too is, like, I don't think many people realize. I think when people think recruiting, they think like Texas, California, the Southeast, and then like basically Ohio and the Midwest. But that DMV area, there's a ton of talent there.
Yeah, it's like there and the Tidewater area of Virginia always have a ton of players. Also, very enjoyable watching this game with Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt on the call. They are terrific.
They are. I mean, I think they're the best right now, aren't they, you think?
I would agree. I would say they're my top college football team. Obviously, I love Herbie and Fowler do a great job too. But I think that the energy that the whole Fox kind of broadcast has brought is very impressive. I know we'll talk about that a little later in the show.
And then there's what? Nessler and Danielson, right? That's the top team on the CBS? Number 5 Clemson 51 Wake 45, a wildly entertaining game.
Spectacular game. Sam Hartman, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. The Clemson defense was just getting absolutely shredded, especially in their secondary. But you know, how much of it was bad defense and how much of it was just terrific Sam Hartman, I don't know. We'll see as the season goes along. He played great. But also, it should be said, DJ played phenomenally for Clemson as well. He was putting the ball where it needed to be. Neither team could stop the other one. It was a classic game, and the fans were all fired up for Wake Forest. Looked like a nice day in Winston-Salem. It was a great nooner. It was kind of the opposite. You know, a lot of times we talk about how these nooners are sleepy and quiet and boring, and this one was terrific. Pick right from the get-go.
And yeah, I mean, good on Wake. Talk about a tough place to win, right?
They're a good team though. This was not a case of them coming in overrated because they were ranked. It was the first ranked meeting between Wake and Clemson since the 50s, I believe I saw.
Oh wow.
And they're a legit good team. Again, they're like I see some similarities with Maryland. They both have real good offenses and they have, you know, chances to have real good seasons this year.
Kansas State 41, number 6, Oklahoma 34. Speaking of teams not being the vintage selves, this is not a vintage Oklahoma team, Mike.
Yeah, I did not see much of this game, but Kansas State is just one of those teams that they kind of have Oklahoma's number. They've beaten them now on their last 2 trips to Norman, and they've done that twice since the year 2000, and no one else has done it even once against Oklahoma, which I thought was a fascinating statistic.
I think so Oklahoma's got stuff to figure out here.
What do you think? Let me ask you this. 2 weeks ago, Oklahoma went into Lincoln and demolished the Cornhuskers. And then 2 weeks later, their former quarterback, Adrian Martinez, who was always pretty good for Nebraska, but not even he could turn that program around, has just a huge game and almost single-handedly beats Oklahoma in Norman. That's just got to be salt in the wounds for the Cornhusker fans.
You think?
Yeah, a bad season gets worse.
I've heard some very interesting discussions about this particular issue, which I think is really fascinating. Look, Oklahoma has a present and a future, and that future very likely in my mind by this time in 2 years, they're going to be playing in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to need to remake that roster to compete in that conference.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who really know what they're talking about when it comes to how rosters are built that are not convinced that Oklahoma is ready to compete in that conference. And I'm not one just to say, like, say every SEC team is built differently than a Big 12 team.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain style of play in the SEC that you need to kind of, like, step up to that teams like, say, like Auburn currently aren't at. But there's some big boys on the defensive line in the SEC. It's kind of like across the board, except for the very bad teams. And Oklahoma hasn't had to deal with that in their league, right?
So yeah, that's a great point. I mean, look at, could you draw a parallel between Nebraska switching conferences and Oklahoma switching conferences? And we've seen what that's done for Nebraska. So that's a very good point. The only counterpoint I would have to it is that, you know, Brent Venables, while he was not in the SEC, he was in South Carolina and he was recruiting that level of player from that region that he's going to have to recruit from. So I think they're probably well positioned with him as their head coach in terms of recruiting in that, in the South. But that's a very interesting, point by these so-called knowledgeable people you talk about.
It's Tom Luganville. Do you listen to him on Sunday ever, Mike? He's really good.
I don't, but I like Luganville a lot. He definitely knows his stuff, but I don't listen to him on Sunday.
Number seven, USC 17, Oregon State 14. A good gritty road win for USC, as we know, an arduous journey to Research Stadium, Mike. I do enjoy, I watched quite a bit of pregame stuff, whether it was on Horrible Game Day or other stuff, and there actually was quite a bit of commentary about what a tough place, not like in volume or intimidation, but what a tough trip it is to go to Research Stadium. I loved it.
Yeah, you did hear that as a theme, like the hotel is very far away from the stadium. the town is very far away from anything. It's an odd place to go. And, you know, this was a game I was kind of interested in, but it kicked off at 9:30, and little did I know it was only on the Pac-12 networks, which I don't know if you get, but I do not get. And so not too many people watch this game, but a gritty road win for USC. You know, they've been doing it with offense all year, and they only score 17 points on the Beavers and come away with a win. I still think that's a quality win for them.
Number 23, A&M 23, number 10, Arkansas 21. I'll say this, with both these teams, I got no idea what to make of either of them. They both have their flaws. Arkansas very well could end up being a very bad team this year, I think. A&M, they're all over the map, including they have a tough game this week, I think, in my mind. Did you see any of this game, Mike?
I just saw highlights, and the kick that Arkansas missed at the end was such a heartbreaker. I'd never, ever in my entire life seen a ball go off the very, very top of the uprights. And also it was at an NFL stadium, so they're higher than they are in college. I think I heard that. So a wild, wild ending. Arkansas could have won. But you're right. I don't think – I think these are both good, not great teams if you had to pin me down.
Yeah. The chances of you hitting kicking a ball, having it land on top of the goalposts are astronomically
small. I know. That's why I've never seen it, and I heard a lot of people saying they'd never seen it as well. It's just incredible.
But, like, what's the rule? If it goes directly over the crossbar, is that a judgment call by the
– Yeah, I don't think anyone knows, because that's what happened, in, of course, famously in the Pinstripe Bowl with Indiana and Duke. that's why we need – that's yet another reason we need lasers in the uprights.
Number 11, 38 – I'm sorry, number 11, Tennessee, 38, number 20, Florida, 33. I mean this most sincerely. I'm so happy for the Vols fans to have that day, Mike, to have that day.
Yeah, that was great to see the players after the game celebrating with the fans and the band. And, you know, how good is Florida? We don't know. Is this like a Tennessee is back moment? I'm still not convinced 100% about that. But you had over 100,000 people in Neyland. You had game day there. You had a raucous environment like the Tennessee of old. And so I was happy to see them win. And kudos to Florida. They showed up. They competed hard. But it was definitely Tennessee's day.
Speaking of us being old, Mike, it's funny. There's a whole generation beneath us who, like, has no memory whatsoever of the 90s when, like, this was the game in the SEC every single year. Like, literally.
Yeah, were we speaking about being old? I don't think we were. I think that was just you bringing it up. Yeah, in the 90s, there were multiple meetings between these two schools where they were both in the top 10. I mean, this is so long ago, Alabama was not a thing back then in the 90s.
They weren't. That's how long ago it was. Alabama was not in the picture. And I think Georgia was led by, was it still Ray Goff back then?
Like, yeah, it was just, it was a different world, kids.
And the Fulmer Spurrier thing was just, oh gosh, so great.
They were the two alphas in the SEC.
They were great. For our Penn State audience, number 14, Penn State 33, Central Michigan 14. I saw the first like 10 minutes of this game. Penn State scored in the first two drives, picked off Central Michigan. I'm like, okay, good to go. And then Jack, who's at the game, starts texting me while I'm coaching soccer saying, this is bad, this is bad. Classic, hangover game after last week.
Yeah.
It exposed some lingering issues for Penn State, though.
Well, it's funny because you said you watched the first 10 minutes and I was kind of clicking around and I saw when it was 14-0 Penn State. And then, but everything I saw from that point on was all Central Michigan. And yeah. It did look like it was just, it looked like a beautiful day there in Happy Valley. And, you know, did Penn State really want to be playing this game? And again, this is just the segment that I saw, but then they came out in the second half and took care of their business. I think this is much like Georgia in that you say, congrats Central Michigan for coming to play, but an understandable letdown for Penn State and not a big issue moving forward.
Bigger issue, Texas Tech 37, number 22, Texas 34. So things still aren't great in Texas, Mike.
Texas, I guess, is not back, but great scene in Lubbock with them winning an overtime. Everybody's going crazy, by the way, for Texas Tech's coach, McGuire. He is an up-and-comer, apparently, for that Texas Tech program. And 1 week after they were my lock of the week and didn't cover, they come through with the big win over the Longhorns.
This one I saw quite a bit of and or listened to on the IMG Learfield College Football Blitz. Middle Tennessee State 45, number 25, Miami 31. Miami again, can we put Miami in the same category as Texas? And let's have t-shirts made with OCT branding saying neither Texas nor Miami is back and just like sell those. This wasn't a fluke. Middle Tennessee State controlled both lines of scrimmage. See the 99-yard touchdown pass, Mike?
I did, and it was like one game. The play right after they held him on fourth down, I believe.
And the Middle Tennessee State guy who caught the ball ran away from the Miami D-backs. He ran.
It was just a pure speed thing.
I mean, just a real Miami. I think they don't want to face the reality. And I know Pitt figured it out in some ways with the NFL stadium. You cannot compete if you're Miami. I think Coral Gables is quite a drive from that stadium. I think
it is.
I've heard that crowd may have been 15,000 people. You need to rethink your facilities strategy here. You're never, ever, ever going to be what you were in the early 2000s or the 1980s. It's impossible in this day and age of college football. It just is.
Tyler Van Dyke was benched in this game. I mean, 3 weeks ago, people were talking about him winning the Heisman. That's how quickly things can turn in college football. Also, a great post-game press conference by Coach Cristobal in which he looked like his youngest child had just been killed.
Yeah, not great for Miami. He's got a lot of work to do. Mike, for you, Cincinnati 45, Indiana 24. I believe you were at the Orioles game, so you couldn't watch this game.
But I somehow managed to not see any scores, so I watched it in its entirety when I got home. It was an entertaining game, but I have to say, watching it, Cincinnati just looked like the better team on both sides of the ball, especially the line of scrimmage. I mean, IU made a couple plays, but the skill people and especially Cincinnati's defense really outplayed Indiana's offense. And it wasn't a situation where a couple turnovers hurt us or penalties. It was just Cincinnati looked like the better team. And they were 17-point favorites going into that game. And they covered. And there was nothing fluky about it. So credit to them. They had a great crowd at Nippert Stadium. Again, looked like a nice day there in Cincinnati in the Midwest. But I think that's one of, you know, obviously IU plays in a tough division, but that's one of the hardest, one of the best teams they'll face all year. I bet they're better than Michigan State. Obviously, they're not better than Michigan, Ohio State, and probably Penn State, but they're definitely better than I think anyone. They could be solid in the middle of the pack in the Big Ten East.
By the way, speaking of Michigan State, pretty bad, huh?
Oh my God. They were, Tim, I looked at our locks of the week this week. It was, you had Rutgers and I had Michigan State. I mean, that's just, we deserve to lose, and we did both lose. Yeah, this is a regressing to the means season for Michigan State. It looks like that, doesn't it?
Oh, it totally does. It's like they had stopped being Sparty. Now they're Sparty again.
Exactly. And just like you said earlier in the show, it's like one step forward, three steps back for Michigan State. And they're in the middle of taking these three steps back.
Finally, I want to say, I told you last week, I think you doubted me, Mike, but I sat down and I watched Iowa Rutgers.
I did doubt you.
I had 27, Rutgers 10. And I mentioned it because I was disappointed at how many points were scored. I really was hoping for like a 5-2 or something like that.
Yeah.
Granted, Iowa's first 14 points were, of course, defensive touchdowns, which made me chuckle a little bit.
That's so Iowa.
We'll mention Iowa more later because you – look, their offense is dreadful. I mean, it's putrid. But in a big game against a top five team, you can never count Iowa out at home. You can't. And they've got an opportunity this week, and I would not be shocked in the least just because they're Iowa if they might do something. Anyway, Mike, the top 25. You ready?
Let's do it.
We'll do the AP this week since we did coaches last week. I love this. Drop from rankings. Shame, shame, shame. Florida, Texas, and Miami.
Oh, that is what a great trio drop from the rankings.
I know. Others receiving votes. We have Kansas. Shame. No, not ranked. Not ranked.
I love Kansas. The Kansas-Duke game was wildly entertaining, and everyone was making their basketball school jokes. But both these teams, I don't know how good they are, but they both played hard. They play with great enthusiasm. The fans seem like they're into it at Kansas, and those Jayhawk players are believing. And they're 4-0. They're only two wins away from a bowl, which is something that's unheard of at Kansas in the last decade plus. So kudos to the Jayhawks.
So others in the others receiving votes, we got Cincy with 60, Washington State 31, Syracuse for some reason with 22, LSU with 7, James Madison with 4.
James Madison had a monster comeback to beat Appalachian State on Saturday, and they're in their first year of playing with the big boys in the group of 5, and that's a great program win for them, for the Dukes.
Finally, Tulane with 3 votes, Mike, and here we go. 25 K-State, 24 Pitt, 23 Florida State, 22 Wake Forest, 21 Minnesota.
They have the wrong Kansas school ranked.
No question. And I think Minnesota deserves a little more than 21.
Yeah, they Minnesota, say what you will about Sparty, but Minnesota has emerged as a team to beat in the West, don't you think?
They've got like a 10th year quarterback like Penn State, which always helps, and a phenomenal
and a superstar quarterback. Running back.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah. 20 Arkansas, 19 BYU, 18 Oklahoma, 17 A&M, 16 Baylor.
Not sure what to make of those teams. Baylor, though, they had a nice win over Iowa State, correct?
Yep.
And that's kind of an important win for the jockeying in the Big 12.
15 Washington, 14 Ole Miss, 13 Oregon, 12 Utah, who's always around 12, right? They're just hanging around 12, and 11 Penn State.
I love Washington, as I talked about last week on the show with their former IU coach and IU quarterback. Penn State creeping up toward the top 10. Do you think they're a top 10 caliber team?
I think they are appropriately ranked at number 11 right now, Mike.
Yeah, I would agree. They need to show me a little bit more.
I mean, they have Northwestern this week, and then they have this wonderful stretch of games. I think it's in order: Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio State.
Yeah, the Minnesota crossover game does not look favorable for them this year. Not particularly for them, but there are a lot of easier teams you could be scheduled against in the West.
That's the Whiteout game this year, Mike.
Oh, all right. And you'll be there, right?
As of now, yes.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, it's life. You can only plan so much.
Number 10, NC State. 9, Oklahoma State. 8, Tennessee, much deserved. 7, Kentucky, much deserved. 6, USC, we shall see.
Yeah, NC State ranked number 10, so that's a top 10 matchup for them this week with Clemson. That's where game day will be, and that'll be a tremendous atmosphere down there for the compadres, as you like to say.
And 5 Clemson, 4 Michigan, 3 Ohio State, 2 Bama, 1 Georgia. I do think it's – I wouldn't say it's notable. I think last week Ohio State had 1 first-place vote and Bama had 3, based probably on Georgia, quote-unquote, struggling against Kent State this week. Bama has 4 and Ohio State has 4.
Yeah, that's all completely irrelevant to me.
I mean, the polls are relevant.
They really are.
But we enjoy
they're a harbinger of our youth. You know, we're still somewhat interested in them because that's just the way we were raised, but they are irrelevant.
Mike, quick note. This has been a recurring thing. I am clear-eyed, too, about this making me sound like a grumpy old man at the age of 46. Game day is getting worse and worse. We're on the same page here, right, Mike? It's just not the show it was.
It's not. It's definitely not the show it was. I think you might be a little more annoyed by it than me. But I will say that this week, largely because they were in Ann Arbor and I was interested in the Maryland game, it's one of my teams, I watched a lot more of the Fox show. And the Fox show is terrific. I really think it is... it's more my style where they talk more about football. You're still now, admittedly, they ripped this off 100% from game day. They're on location. They are interacting with the fans. You're getting the flavor and the sense of being there. That's what's most important about these college football pregame shows. But I really love the job Fox has been doing on college football from pregame to their game coverage. Now they just need a postgame show to rival college football final, which I don't hate. But I think competition in this area is good.
I have to say. So I call my parents every Saturday, either before or after Penn State games, just to like talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I called them during the pregame buildup. And I was like, oh, Mom, like game day is driving me crazy. I'm like, why are they always laughing? Just like, yeah, why are they always laughing? I'm like, I don't know. And you have Pat McAfee there now. It's like he's too good to wear a tie, apparently. It's like, come on, dude.
That's a great old man Midwestern grumbling point.
Like, it looks like a pro wrestler, right? Just put on a decent like outfit. Come on, man.
That's his look. That's his brand, Tim.
It sucks. And then I was like, oh, let's turn it out. Try to watch like Big Noon Kickoff, which I do like. They teased that Clay Travis. Like, I can't watch Clay Travis. I'm sorry.
No. Definitely. There's a lot of these shows, they're trying to be too many things to too many people, I feel like.
So she's like, oh,
just be everything to you and I.
She's like, I'm watching the Big Ten Network pregame show and they're at Penn State. I'm like, what are you talking about? No, the Big Ten show is at Michigan. She's like, no, the Big Ten show is at Penn State. So I didn't realize there's actually a Big Ten Network, like it's Big Ten Tailgate or whatever.
I've never seen that in my life.
Me either. So I tune in. Okay. So it's like, I have Mike Hall, who's pretty funny. I like him a lot. And then a bunch of other guys or whatever. And they're at Penn State. It's like Penn State, Central Michigan. Okay.
Is there like 20 people behind them with no signs?
I was just going to say, it was like, I would say charitably 45, 50 people there. Right.
Yeah.
I almost felt bad for the host. It's like, are you kidding me? Like you're putting this like show on when even most Penn State fans don't care about this game.
Yeah. A noon game against Central Michigan. That is a tough ask.
Anyway, game day, do better. Just focus on football and leave the rest of it out of the equation, please. Mike, games of the week. We'll start here. Utah State at number 19 BYU, 8 p.m. Thursday, ESPN. I love like the fact that Utah has 3 like legit great football programs in Utah.
Yeah, I know. It does seem a little random, doesn't it? BYU favored by 24 against Utah State. Now, Utah State, they won their conference last year, but they have been really struggling this year. They're 1-3, 0-1 on the road. 24 seems like a big number, but yeah, I wonder if like you always hear about this, about the holy war between BYU and Utah, and you got to figure Utah State is like, well, what about us? We don't like either one of these teams too either.
Are they the temple of Pennsylvania?
You mean of Utah?
of Utah, yes.
Temple is the temple of Pennsylvania.
It is. If I went to this game, I would bring a big sign asking everyone, what's the status of the drying of the Great Salt Lake, Mike?
You are interested in that, as very few of our listeners were.
Number 15, Washington at UCLA, 10:30 p.m. Friday, ESPN. Here, just wondering what the crowd's going to be at UCLA. And also, I don't know much about Washington except they kicked the crap out of Michigan State, who's awful.
Yeah, they look great so far this year, and they're 2.5-point road favorites against an undefeated UCLA team. So Chip Kelly had all these veterans coming back, and they've had some shaky results, like against South Alabama, barely beating them, but they've made it here 4-0. Washington also at 4-0. Kind of an interesting Pac-12 matchup on a Friday night at God knows what time. Yeah, 10:30 Eastern.
I think this one to me, Mike, God knows where we're going to be. If we can, I think we should tune in for this. The aforementioned number 4 Michigan at Iowa, noon, Fox. Again, speaking as a Penn State fan, one of the last places you want to go when you have a really good team is a road trip to Iowa. It's a tough place to play. It really is. Even when Iowa's not good, and often they're mediocre at best, they just have a knack for being a pain in the ass to play at. Right?
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Didn't they had a huge win over Michigan 2 years ago, I think it was.
They beat us once when we were top three in the country.
Yep.
They put us there. They took our Saquon Barkley team, which is an excellent team, to literally the last play of the game. They beat Ohio State there. It's a brutal environment. I think Michigan's very fortunate that this is a noon kick.
Yeah, but look, I'll tell you right now, there's no way Michigan is going to run the ball on Iowa like they did against Maryland. So they're going to need a better passing attack. But it always comes down to, how is Iowa going to score points? If they're going to win, it's going to be one of these games that, you know, they win 17-14 or something. Michigan is a 10.5-point favorite on the road. Seems like a big number to me. The total in this game, 42.5. I love looking at Iowa's over-unders.
I mean, Harbaugh said, I think yesterday, it's true. He's like, you know, Iowa is what they are. And he's like, they beat you on execution. And of course they do, because they don't have superstar talent across
right.
the roster.
Right.
But Kirk Ferentz, look, I understand the frustration Iowa fans have with their offense at times. It must be maddening to watch. But the results he's gotten at Iowa, they do speak for themselves, right? And
yeah,
he is a tremendous coach.
He is. But he's been there for a very, very long time, and we don't know if his son is a tremendous coach, the offensive coordinator. That's my biggest issue with him.
I'm safe to say he's not.
I think it is safe to say that.
Speaking of an Iowa-ish program, the number 7, Kentucky at number 14, Ole Miss, noon, ESPN. I love this game. We should watch this one too, Mike. I'm a big fan of Lane as well. I think Lane's an offensive genius, but I'm leaning heavily Kentucky here.
Kentucky seems to be the better overall team, right? They have a better defense than Ole Miss, but the game is in the Grove. Both teams 4-0. Ole Miss favored by 6.5. That will be a great atmosphere for the Grove this week. And I believe noted listener Daniel Christie will be making his inaugural appearance at the Grove for this Kentucky-Ole Miss game. I might be wrong about that. I hope I'm not, though.
Enjoy Doc Christie. He will love it, right?
Yes, and he did the same thing. I know he's doing it for a game. I thought it was this game, but where they are renting some, you know, hiring a company essentially to set up their entire tailgate in the Grove, just like we did. And I told him that was a great move.
Like, if we hadn't done that, we'd be clueless, right?
Yeah, we'd just be walking around in our terrible East Coast clothes, getting laughed at, and we would have no home base. Yeah, you need it for Ole Miss for sure.
This game, one of two games this week, that's a big prove it to us game. Look, Minnesota's a good team and their offense is explosive. To me, this is one of those games, again, coming off with their 4-0, they're feeling great. Mm-hmm. You have a Purdue team. Well, I think Purdue is pretty decent. They've just cost, like, they could have beaten Penn State. They could have. They made mistakes.
And they easily could have beaten Syracuse. There's no doubt they could be 4-0 and they'd be ranked right now.
Purdue at number 20, Minnesota, noon, ESPN2. I think this is a danger game for Minnesota.
Gophers favored by 11.5. I think it helps them immensely that they're at home. And also, they can't be coming off this win over Michigan State thinking it's, quote, a big win, right? It's not like this was Michigan State from last year, and I think everyone knows it at that at this point. So maybe the letdown factor won't be quite as big for the Gophers. But you're right, kind of a sneaky type of Big Ten game that, admittedly, you do have to be a pretty hardcore Big Ten fan to enjoy. But the winner of this one really might have the inside track for the division.
Oregon State at number 12, Utah, 2 p.m. Pac-12 Network. I'm not sure why I put this game here, Mike, except I like Oregon State.
Well, we already talked about the Beavers. Utah, 10.5-point favorite against Oregon State. Yeah, I don't really have much more to say on that one either.
Number 2, Bama at number 20, Arkansas, 3:30, CBS. I think this will be the end of Arkansas being ranked in the top 25.
Okay, so you don't give the Hogs a fighting chance here? Arkansas getting 17 at home against Alabama?
No.
Well, I don't know. We saw the way Texas played against Alabama. And is Texas really that much better than Arkansas? I'm not sure. But then again, of course, Bama has, I'm sure, improved since the Texas game. So I don't know. I don't think this one is as foregone a conclusion as you do. Alabama will probably and almost certainly win, but I don't know if it'll be the blowout like you think it will be.
Homework this week for the audience. Number 9, Oklahoma State at number 16, Baylor, 3:30 p.m. on Fox. An interesting Big 12 game early-ish in the season.
So this is the big game on Fox, the big nooner. This is the 3:30. Okay.
Yeah.
Baylor favored by 2.5. Yeah, huge game in the Big 12. These are probably the best two teams in the conference, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yeah, and so whoever wins, obviously, will be in great shape to at least make it to the title game.
Northwestern at number 11, Penn State, 3:30 p.m. Fox, again, for our Penn State audience. Northwestern looks really bad, and I think Penn State is fortunate that they had a quote-unquote struggle last week against Central Michigan. They should dispatch Northwestern fairly easily. If they don't, that signals worse things to come.
Completely agree. How in God's name can Northwestern's best win be over and only win be over Nebraska? They beat Nebraska and then they've lost three straight games. They didn't even look very good against Nebraska, but Penn State favored by 26.5. They should destroy Northwestern.
I mean, it's a huge number, but like it's justified, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree with what you said. The somewhat sleepy performance against the Chippewas on Saturday should get the coaching staff to be able to coach these guys up this week.
Number 22, Wake Forest at number 23, Florida State, 3:30 ABC. To me, a test of Wake Forest's mettle.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be so impressed if they can bounce back. Look, they played an awesome game against Clemson. They must have been absolutely heartbreaking the way that game ended, right? It was so close. They were so close. To have the mental strength to pack that away and refocus and go on the road and get a win at Florida State, I think it would speak volumes. It's what's the line here, Mike?
Florida State favored by 6.5.
I would lean heavy Wake here. I would.
You everything you just said, I think you said it beautifully, test of their mettle, because emotionally it's going to be extremely difficult to bounce back after that Clemson loss. Whereas you have a Florida State team that's feeling great about themselves, their fans are going to be fired up for really the first time in what, like 5 years down there in Tallahassee. It's a 3:30 kick. So, you know, that's going to be a great crowd there, Doak Campbell. And so the situation, the environment certainly favors Florida State, but watching Sam Hartman last week, you know, he's going to be probably the best player on the field. So it's a very, very intriguing game.
My advice to the Florida State coaching staff is this, Mike. Having been to many games where it's like, okay, like Florida State's favorite, I know that fan base, they're going to be thinking like, okay, we are better because we're Florida State and they're Wake, yep, despite Wake being good this year or whatever. If Florida State's win the toss, the last thing you want to do is defer and or kick. You want the ball.
Mm.
Because worst case scenario is you kick off to Wake Forest and Hartman drives down the field and scores a touchdown. That stadium immediately turns grumpy and concerned. And the players, you know that feeling, Mike, where the fans immediately are like, oh no. Oh,
here we go again. It's the constant here we go again.
So yeah, Florida State, take the ball. Take the ball. Another big one here for a team who has stuff to prove. Michigan State at Maryland, 3:30 FS1. Again, Maryland played wonderfully last week in Michigan. They welcome a bad Michigan State team. Are the Terrapins going to be able to mentally refocus and take care of business against a team they should beat by all rights? They should beat these guys.
They should beat. And really the first time you can say they should beat Michigan State since Mike Loxley got there. And it's reflected in a line. They're favored by 7.5 points. 3:30 kick, which I think advantageous to Maryland that it's not at noon. Michigan State seems like a defeated team right now. But Maryland, how many times has Maryland been in the situation where they're the favorite and they're expected to win? If they lose this game, then it's going to be the exact same season Maryland always has. 6 wins, possibly 7, going to a crappy bowl. If they beat Michigan State, they can really move up in the pecking order of the division. Key, very important game, and kind of on a mini level, a barometer of where they are as a program.
I think if Maryland can win this game, they're on track for a really nice, like, 9-ish win season.
Yeah, I mean, they could get to 9. They have Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State, of course, on the schedule. So 9's the absolute ceiling, but clearly they'd have to win this one.
Another one, number 17, A&M at Mississippi State, 4 p.m. SEC Network. We still don't know what to make of A&M. I'm curious to see what happens in this game. I don't know what to make of them.
Yeah, I don't know much about Mississippi State either. I mean, Mike Leach has a good offense with that quarterback, Rodgers, but I don't really know much about the rest of Mississippi State. They're favored by 3.5 over A&M with a 4 p.m. kickoff. So we'll know a little bit more about these programs after this one. But unfortunately, I can't help you, listeners, break that one down.
How about this depressing unranked LSU at unranked Auburn, 7 p.m. ESPN. How combination of having had a long day of tailgating on the planes and also just poisonous is that stadium going to be?
Well, I've never seen a team luckier to win than Auburn was against Missouri on Saturday. They had Missouri had a 27-yard field goal with no time left to win it. 27 yards, and their kicker, who has the best nickname, he's a very big guy, and they call him the thicker kicker, which is tremendous. He missed the field goal after Missouri played insanely not to lose, as a team like Missouri is apt to do. And then in overtime, Auburn kicked a field goal. Missouri is going in for the sure win, walk-off touchdown. The guy reaches the ball out to try and extend it past the goal line, and he just clearly dropped it on the one-yard line. It goes through the end zone for a touchback. Brian Harsin, the coach of Auburn, there was no one in the entire stadium who could believe that they'd won that game less than him. I mean, he looked like he had no expectation of winning. I'm very, very convinced that if they had lost that game, he would be fired. On Sunday, he's still going to be fired, but he got himself a little reprieve. And you're right, this is going to be not the LSU Auburn matchup of old, that's for sure.
How about this for Clemson? I mean, like, good on the ACC for like getting better. Number 10 NC State and number 5 Clemson, 7:30 ABC. NC State's a solid team, and like going back to what I said about Maryland, they're a physical team. They can play football, and I think Clemson also better be on watch after last
week. Yeah, this game is hardly a layup for Clemson. They're favored by 6.5 right now, and as we mentioned earlier, the remnants of the hurricane will be down there in South Carolina, so you have no idea what the weather's going to be like. Game day will be down there. It'll be a raucous environment. I definitely give NC State a chance to win. There's no doubt about it. But the fact that the game is in Death Valley is going to make it tough for NC State. But they have a veteran team. They've played down there before. And I don't know, I would actually kind of lean NC State with the points.
Finally, the late game, of course, Stanford. I had to choose one. Stanford at number 13, Oregon, 11 p.m. FS1. Whatever, Mike.
I love when the West Coast games start at 11, not even 10:30. They're like, there's not a chance that a single person on the East Coast will be watching this. So, hey, we'll go 8 p.m. here on the West Coast. What has happened to Stanford?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? Like,
they're like one of the worst teams in the Pac-12, and really one of the worst teams in the Power Five. Oregon is a 17-point favorite here against the Cardinal.
All right, Mike. So I'd like to skip the segment, but what were our picks last week?
Yeah, your pick was Rutgers. You lost, and you went to 0-4. And noted listener Ryan Tozier, he loves the segment because he really appreciates your preparation for the research that goes into picking your team. And he also commented about, it's pretty remarkable going 0-4. You'd think that just, you know, for some reason you'd get lucky and win one. I mean, I'm 1-3, so I'm not one to talk. I went with Sparty last week, equally dumb.
Bobby hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lot, probable loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
Tim, for this week's Lock of the Week, we are going to the aforementioned Clemson, South Carolina, home of many of our listeners, home school of many of our listeners, and home of a hurricane on Saturday. Clemson is a 6.5-point favorite, as I said, hosting NC State, but I'm not going to look for the first time this year. I'm looking at the total, Tim. It is all the way down to 40.5 points. Now, that's obviously because of the impending weather. However, watching Sam Hartman torch Clemson's secondary last week and watching how great DJ looked on offense for Clemson, I can't see a way this game goes under 40 points, even if it is played in a downpour. NC State has Devin Leary. He's a veteran, experienced, and talented quarterback. DJ is playing his best football, it looks like, as quarterback for Clemson. I just think 40.5 points is just way, way too low, despite the fact that there'll be a droplet or two falling. So I'm going to take the over 40.5 points.
I'm going all in on Wake Forest, Mike.
Yeah, I could kind of sense that one coming. So you're going to say +6.5 Wake at Doak Campbell, 3:30 kickoff. Interesting. You could be a week short on Wake, or your theories could be rewarded.
What are your thoughts, Mike?
I don't know. That's a tough line for me. I could see it, classic line coming here, going either way.
All right, we'll switch up. At this point, who cares? I'm underwater here, Mike.
Yeah, so, you need to get on the board with a victory, though.
All right. So again, our trip this week. I will not ask for any hints. Of course, I'm excited for the reveal at the airport. Anything else to say about the trip, Mike?
Actually, the reveal for you will come tomorrow because we are going to, after hitting a brewery, we are going to pop into the casino and we are going to place a bet if we want, and I certainly do want, on the game that we will be attending. And so that's when the reveal will be for you.
What casino?
The Horseshoe Casino, and it's right next to the Camden Yards and the football stadium downtown. So, We're gonna hit a brand new brewery that's right around there. Then we're gonna hit the casino real quick. Then we're gonna go out and get some food and some more drink with noted non-listener Danielle Underfirth, but she will be joining us. And then we'll see what we'll do. We might have to pop into Mahaffey's for one.
We have. It's tradition. It's tradition.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, cool. Mike, thanks again. Everyone, I will be better about posting updates and pictures on our Instagram account during the entire trip.
We have an Instagram account?
We do.
All right.
So I'll be sharing that. So please check our Instagram account. And Mike, there's one thing to say.
Pachas.
Pachas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit intelligentcollegefootball.com.